up, everybody? This is Charlie Sierra. This is the Combat Veterans Brotherhood podcast. It is the official podcast of the Brotherhood, where our mission is to create space for combat veterans to exert a challenging, encouraging influence on culture through thought, word, and action. And we do this through the accountability of the team life. We find each other, we strengthen each other, and then we execute. I hope you enjoy. To us is given the honor of striking a blow for freedom which will live in history. And in the better days that lie ahead, men will speak with pride of our doings. General Bernard Law Montgomery. So today we're going to talk about Bernard Montgomery's seven qualities of military leadership. Now, why do we talk about leadership so much? Why is leadership so important? It's because you can't serve other people when you don't have influence. Some of the best leaders I know are people who they care about serving other people, which is why they became leaders. They didn't first say, you know, hey, I want power. How do I get power? How do I get money? That wasn't their first thought. In fact, there are a lot of people who became leaders because they saw things done that were not optimizing people. They saw a need and they wanted to be the one to fix it. And they wanted to step up and say, you know what, I'm gonna go ahead and be the one to take care of that. There are a lot of problems in the world today, and there are a lot of people suffering because we don't have the leadership that we need, or people aren't listening to it, or they don't know where to go, they don't know where to look. Think about people around you and think about what would happen if you had more influence on their life. Don't think about how right now, just say bigger to them. What if my words meant more to them? What if they took my words to heart more? What would I say and how would I say it? Because leadership is not a skill, it's not a checklist. If you do these things, it's easy to be a leader. Leadership involves a bunch of other stuff. There's soft skills. They're what they call soft skills. They're social skills, kind of. And you have to develop things in yourself over years to be able to be a great leader. So what do I mean by that? Well, let's take selfishness, for instance. If you're a selfish person, it's going to come through in what you do and how you do it. There are a lot of people like me who aren't good at pretending something when you're feeling something else. And so when that's you, it can be very difficult to pretend that you care about people if you don't. And so for me, I've had to actually change. It's become an advantage because I actually have to change who I am. I actually have to change what I care about because I know what's right and I can't hide the fact that I'm not doing what's right. It's difficult for me. I can't live a life like that. It's too hard. And I think there are a lot of you out there who are like that and you want to lead, but maybe you've given up or maybe you think you're not a leader. Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit. So let's go through General Bernard Law Montgomery's seven qualities of military leadership. And we're going to see how we can potentially apply these to our personal lives. So the first one he talks about is getting swamped in detail. And this is a problem for leaders because if you get swamped in detail, you tend to become pessimistic and you tend to focus on the things that aren't going right. And you tend to worry about small things that aren't gonna majorly affect things. And while you're worrying about the small things, it's very difficult to get up and look at the big things and say, you know what, this war, it's going to, or this battle, it's going to go well, and here's why. And it's very difficult to see bigger problems and say, hey, here's a big problem we need to take care of. What are we going to do about that? Because there are these small problems, I don't care about those. And I'm going to let company grade officers handle those things. Or I'm going to let my field grade officers, I'm going to let them work out the strategy in their own particular area, because I'm going to focus on the big picture and I'm going to do really well there because that's where everybody needs me to do well. So what you do instead of getting swamped in details, you find ways to delegate. Now, I know a lot of us maybe don't think that we're good delegators, but the fact is that you grow in that. How do you get people to listen to you, right? How do you get people to receive delegation and accept it and then execute on it? Well, there's a lot involved in that. Too much to go into right now, but there are ways to do it, and the way you start is not by wishing you were a better delegator. It's not by wishing you could influence people to work on stuff. How you start is you start trying, and you just find out, what are people willing to do? What are they willing to do, and how do I push that a little more? And so getting swamped in detail is number one. Number two, pettiness, being petty. And so pettiness removes your ability to lead. It hurts your ability to lead, because if you're petty, people aren't looking for someone petty to follow. They're looking for someone who has a grand vision and someone who believes that you can achieve that vision. Pettiness is something that a bureaucrat does. Pettiness is something that that someone who's worried about the rules, following the rules, does. And that can be a problem. So think about people in your life who are petty. Do you take them seriously? Not probably. If you have a boss who's petty, are you willing to follow them to hell and back? Probably not, right? So pettiness is, a lot of times pettiness is because they want to cause drama over small things, because there's nothing bigger to focus on when people are petty. And that's the message it sends. And so to avoid pettiness is, it's almost something that you just like, focus on the big things, focus on the grand things. It's a little bit like getting swamped in detail, and the pettiness is more like holding standards that don't really matter, and then focusing on the fact that we're not meeting those standards. So don't focus, don't be petty, and instead focus on the bigger picture and think about all the things that are going right and focus people on that. And then when you're training them to get ready for those big things, focus on the things that are going to materially affect the outcome. And don't be petty about the things that don't. Number three, pomposity. Being pompous. In other words, it's an exaggeration of your own self-importance. So pomposity becomes a problem because people start to think that it's all about you and not about the mission. And nobody wants to follow you when they think that you are all about yourself and your own glory. Because they start to see you making decisions. And in wartime, it's decisions about people's lives. They start seeing you make decisions that, and it's easy for them to imagine that you're doing it for your own glory. So you want to avoid pomposity. You want to avoid being someone who takes themselves too seriously. Because nobody wants to follow somebody who's all about themselves and all about their own self-importance. Number four, select people who fit the task. Now, why is this important? Well, first of all, you're trying to get something done. You want people to be successful in it. You want the task to be successful. But what can happen is, if you don't select people for the task, a few non-obvious things can happen. First of all, well, the obvious one is that they don't get it done right. But usually people can figure out, even if they haven't done it before, a lot of times people can figure it out. So it's not always experience. It oftentimes is mentality. And so, for instance, there's you can have tasks that are standard, and these tasks are very easy to delegate out because you can find people who have done that very task before and just have them do it. The harder part is people who are tasks that are non-standard. They're not ordinary tasks that need to get done, but it needs to get done now, and you can't find anybody with the exact same experience. So you have to look for people who have done similar things, analogous things, meaning not the same thing, but essentially the same thing. So it's like when David was fighting Goliath. Well, it's when he was trying to convince Saul to let him fight Goliath. He basically said, I fought bears, and I fought, not essentially lions, and I've gotten them away from my flock, and I used a staff, and I beat the hell out of them. And this is just like some boy, right? Some like, it's David. And later we find out he was a mighty man. But I mean, during this time, King Saul couldn't, was looking at this kid thinking, I don't even know, right? But there was nobody else who was willing to fight. And so they chose him. But the fact was that he had fought not the same. And so you could easily look at him and say, oh, but he hasn't fought a warrior with a sword. And it's true, he hasn't, and he doesn't have that experience, but he's fought lions and bears, which are a different challenge, but, maybe it's analogous. They're different, but he might win for the same reasons, or you need the same skills to do both. So, for instance, there are a lot of things that I've done that aren't the same as what people have trusted me to do, because they saw that, he did this, and that requires the exact same skills. So instead of, it's like when you're looking for a job, if somebody meets you and finds out, when they see your resume, they say, oh, he hasn't done the exact things we want him to do. But when they meet you, they might say, oh, he's actually a person we like, and so we're more willing now to look at things he's done in the past, and, oh, I see you've done this, and I bet that's a lot like this, right? And so that is, for me, how I sometimes get jobs and get hired. Well, you want to do the same thing with people. You want to find people who fit the task, and this is a management skill that you develop over time. But the reason I forgot to tell you, the reason that you want to be careful about this is because if you don't choose someone who fits the task, you can end up spending a lot more money and time to get that task done by someone who's not very good at it. You can choose someone who's not interested in it and has no skill. You can choose someone who is very interested in doing it and is smart but has no skill, and they may actually get other people to help them, which could be a good thing. So that's why it takes so much experience, because there are many ways to skin a cat. And you can't know all of them, but if you're getting someone who knows how to get things done, just knows how to get things done, knows how to rally people, knows how to figure it out, knows how to make a plan, and knows how to ask for a budget, it's gonna end up getting figured out, right? But it's whether you have time to allow that to happen or not. So it's really based on the circumstance. But it's a huge thing, because here's what else happens. You choose someone who doesn't fit the task, and morale can suffer. So morale for the person you've chosen, if they fail, and it's like giving someone too big of a job, it can be an issue, because you don't want to give people too much, more than they can handle for too long, because then they can lose confidence in themselves, and then you lose a competent person. Was talking with a guy who, a special ops guy yesterday, and he was telling me, these guys are just like, you know, is going through a list of guys who are great operators, and oh, so-and-so, you know, what do we think of so-and-so? Oh yeah, great operator, super competent. Okay, cool. What do we think about this other guy? Oh, great medic, extremely good medic. And he was going through and saying all these awesome things about each of these operators, but then, you know, what kind of sergeant major was he? Oh, crappy, worst guy in the world. And it's these guys who are super competent, people respected them, but then became a sergeant major, and then people started hating them because they just didn't have that skill set. They didn't have the skill set they needed to be a sergeant major, although they had plenty of skills as operators and were very well respected. So that's four, select people who fit the task. Number five is meddling. Avoid it. Avoid meddling. And that's kind of, that's micromanagement right there. And what meddling does is it takes the decision making. So you've delegated something and it's a neat delegation. In other words, there's a good handoff. So if a general asks me to secure an objective, that's a clean handoff because I know that I can basically using military doctrine and then making whatever adjustments I want to make, I can go secure that objective. But if I make a plan and the general says, oh, don't do this, do this other thing, you're thinking, but I know my troops. I know what we're capable of. I know I've been on the ground there. I think that that would not fit into, it would not fit well into our plan. And so now instead of having a coherent plan that's consistent throughout and that where you're commanding it and you understand why every decision is being made, now the general has made some decisions, and so it's partly his plan and partly your plan. So it's this Frankenstein of a plan that's being executed. Now, instead, if the general were to say, were to ask questions and say, oh, well, how are you going to avoid, you know, stepping into this window's field of fire or whatever? And you say, you know, that's a good question. Here's what I did. And then here's why we think that that's a really low risk. The other thing you could, you know, just say, you know what, let me come back with a suggestion for that. That's a good point. And let me go address that and then, you know, bring it back to you or I'm going to go address that. I'm going to address that. Don't worry, General. I got that. That's a good point. Thanks for bringing that up. I'm going to go address it. So now you own the plan and the general isn't meddling and making a Frankenstein plan. So the question is, how do you avoid making this Frankenstein plan where your general has stepped in and said, take my advice, and how do you avoid being that general? Is you ask questions, you ask for a regular report, people know when they're going to contact you, but you're not just showing up changing things. So delegate the job, let it go. If you feel like you need, if you feel like the person may need more help, then build help into the plan, but don't show up, you know, as a surprise. Also, ask questions and let him solve it. Let him own it. Let him handle it. You show up and ask questions, ask for check-ins, and then be really clear about what the objectives are, or objective is. That's number five, meddling. Number six is make clear decisions. And this is a hard thing to do because it requires preparation. It requires your own understanding of your proper mental model of the situation. And what I mean by that is your map that's in your head, your conceptual map of what's going on, matches as closely as possible the reality. And our maps are never perfect. What I see in my head is never a perfect, literal picture of the situation or a battlefield or whatever, or a company or merger or whatever. But when you're making clear decisions, people are able to follow those decisions. Vague decisions are non-followable. And so just like how we mentioned in the previous point, about not meddling, you need to be able to give people a clear objective. This is what number six is talking about, making clear decisions. Because if somebody tells me, this is something from the business world too, just like all these, because if you're in creative work, for instance, you know, a lot of people don't understand how to lead creative work, but it's really simple. It's like a lot of things. It's just, you have to be really precise about word usage. So you need someone who's very literal and who's a good researcher and who can make decisions to be a strategist to help the creative go well. So what you have to do is go out and research, build up a body of knowledge, and make it make sense, and so that you have a clear understanding of what's going on. And then you make a clear decision about the message. So I might go out and talk to, maybe I'm selling, you know, the whole idea is like, all right, so let's say I'm selling coffee to veterans, right? I might go out and just talk with them a little bit, see what they're all about. I might talk with the company and say, what are you guys about, you know? And I take all this information, I put it together, and I say, okay, this coffee company has a cool point of view on being a veteran and drinking coffee. And they also have the obligatory anti-Starbucks, you know, message and making fun of hipsters or whatever. And I take that and then I turn that into a creative brief and I say, all right, creatives, these are the strategic decisions that are made. We've already considered who the audience is, who we want to go after. These decisions are already made. So it's kind of nice for you creatives, because then you can just go execute, right? And the creatives will ask me questions. Then they'll say, oh, we think the audience is someone else. And I'll say, okay, well, let me convince you, because I want to convince you. As a strategist, I want to convince you because I want you to feel like you can really do the work. I want you to feel confident and excited to do the work. And you're not going to be excited if you doubt. And so I write a one-page creative brief and I say, the single most important thought that needs to come through this message is this. The audience is this, what we're selling is this, and then here's why it matters to the audience. And it gives them something that they can execute on. And that happens all throughout business. It's just that in the creative space, it seems more vague. So it's a good test, right? If it works there, it's going to work anywhere. I mean, it's a tough crowd. Okay, so that's number 6. And, you know, make clear decisions. And then number 7 is inspire confidence. And this is another very soft skill that's very important. And so your ability to get people to feel like the plan is going to work. And so a lot of that comes from all these other things we've talked about, is just your ability to, it's almost kind of like bringing all of it together. So your clear decisions based on a sound reasoning. And this is really where philosophy comes into play, because philosophy, the word philosophy gets a bad rap because we're thinking of all these guys who have these crazy theories like continental philosophy from, you know, from times of old, where the Germans, who had a lot of ideas about like dream psychology, some of which had really good explanatory power, and then some of it's just a little crazy, is off the deep end. And then you have philosophy that's a little more like, what do they call it? Analytical philosophy. And that was more from the British Isles. So you see people like C.S. Lewis, who are more the, you might not call him a philosopher, but he certainly is someone who can expound these ideas and inspire confidence in other people in these ideas. So he's a great example for us right now. But it's the kind of philosophy that actually elevates the conversation, helps people understand a little better what's going on and how and why it's going to work. And so that pretty much any question someone can ask you, you can say, well, you know, here's why, and you can explain it to them. And so you have to have that philosophy to back you up. There have been a lot of people who I've seen, especially in the startup world, because you have a lot of young people who are starting companies, and they have vision, and they have maybe too much confidence for the vision. But that in a way is good, because they get out and they sell it. Well, but they lose trust once they do that once or twice, and people realize that, no, there was nothing behind that. So now let's ask more questions about what's behind that. And then they find out there's nothing behind it, and then they pull funding, and they're sorry they invested that money. And so, inspiring confidence, you can inspire confidence of naive people by just being confident yourself. But how you inspire confidence in either cynical or people who have been burned before is that you give them an explanation. This is why it's going to work, and this is how it's going to work. And thankfully, by the grace of God, I've been given opportunities to do that, to step into situations where people are skeptical and then gain that confidence and inspire people to do better work. And that only comes from having able to explain that plan well in a way that respects people and that brings everybody together. And I'll go through these one by one because it's a good summary. That avoids getting swamped in the detail. I care deeply about the technical doability, I guess, of all these projects. But and if there's a obvious timeline problem, I'm going to ask about it. But I'm not going to get swamped in detail. I'm not going to get petty. I'm not going to call people out on stuff that doesn't matter. I'm focused on getting it done. And I want them to feel respected, and I don't want them to think that I'm petty. I want to avoid pomposity. I don't want to worry about who gets credit. I want to worry about the job getting done and my team winning. I want to select people who fit the task. That means I'm looking for volunteers and then and then also asking people to take on something, but explaining why, especially if they're busy people, making sure there's a start and end date, an end time, and explaining why they're the ones to do it, and then explaining the scope really well, and so that they can just do it and be done, especially if they're busy. I want to avoid meddling, because I want them to, I'm going to ask questions about it, I'm going to ask them, I'm going to hound them about getting the job done, but I'm also not going to meddle and tell them how to do it. It's based on their ability to get it done. And so I have to trust once I delegate, I have to trust. And then I have to make clear decisions. But the nice thing is the clear decisions are not always decisions that just I make. They're decisions that the team feels that they make as well. And that keeps me from having to rely on my position. And so I'm able to make clear decisions. And then this is how in my past I have inspired confidence. So I hope this has been valuable to you. And I'm very interested in knowing what parts of this are most relevant, what parts are the biggest challenges for you, and what you've seen work and what you've seen not work. And maybe there's something on the list that General Montgomery has forgotten, and that's cool too. Thank you for listening. I'm excited to talk about next time. I believe I may have a surprise guest on the show. And so I'm looking forward to talking with him about leadership as well. And I'm looking forward to talking with you guys later. Please comment. And let's build this community and get this conversation going strong.